Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. Welcome to Focus on Albany. My guest today is mayoral candidate Frank Commisso, and he's running for mayor of Albany. So, Frank, it looks like that we've got a little bit of a fiscal problem here in Albany. Can you fill us in on what's going on?
Sure. Good morning, Cynthia, and thank you for having me on your show. The state had commissioned a report last year, and that was to be completed by PFM. They're a third-party, independent third-party that is experienced in producing management audits of municipalities, so that's cities, towns, villages, counties. And PFM conducted this audit of the city of Albany, and what it found was, and really there's a whole lot of things they found. It was actually a fairly lengthy report, but it found that the city of Albany's deficit now is $20.8 to $23.5 million. So we could safely assume in excess of $20 million is the city's deficit. And what that would equate to for homeowners and small businesses in the city of Albany as far as the tax increase goes is somewhere between the range of 36 to 41%, which is, of course, wholly unacceptable. Now, adding some information to that, of course, between 2010 and 2013, the city had a deficit of approximately $7.85 million. That's what the city had requested of New York State to fill budget gaps during that time period. During this current term, from 2014 through current and through the end of this year, the ask of the city of Albany of New York State government to fill its budget hole has been $12.5 million. So there was some level of significant growth this term, approximately $4.5 million or $4.65 million. Now we're going to a whole new range of somewhere between, again, $20.8 and $23.5 million. For me, the report just confirms what we've been seeing here over the past several years, that the city does not have a management plan, that the city really has operated the past 3.5 years without a budget. There was other key findings in the report that we can discuss, but it really spells that there's a situation of characteristic of a crisis here in the city of Albany. And certainly as a candidate for mayor and in my current capacity as a council member, I'm taking that very seriously. And we think that going forward here, as we talk to voters about our plan to address this deficit, I think that there's many people that will continue to be, because we've been walking actually now and going out meeting voters for 3 months, but there are many voters that will increasingly understand that we have a plan and our opponents have excuses, and we'll continue to move forward in that regard.
Now, when you read the report, were you surprised at how much the deficit had grown?
Well, really not, because, of course, this is something that I knew for quite a while. Worked many years at the Office of the State Comptroller, working with public finance. I'm currently employed by the Albany County Comptroller's Office. This is my background. And, of course, I've been on the Finance Committee of the Albany Common Council for 7 years. And I voted against 5 of 7 budgets as a council member for a reason. I voted against many bonds that the city has issued for a reason, because these are not surprising findings to me. Again, this is a city that prior to this audit report being issued, I've consistently characterized as a city that does not operate with a budget, that does not have strong financial management practices. Of course, we already knew this, right? Standard & Poor's last year, an independent third party, again, a credit rating agency, came to the city of Albany, downgraded the city's credit rating. We know that we have approximately 750 employees working without contracts. We know that the city does not have a formal capital plan. We know that the city does not have a fleet management plan. We actually found out one of the very interesting findings in the PFM report was that people now can be hired by the city of Albany and start working in the field without budget approval, without HR approval, without filing necessary paperwork, and without undergoing mandatory citywide training. So to me, I mean, that's a interesting finding in and of itself. In fact, you know, certainly if I was the mayor, I'd probably be making a change as it relates to the leadership of the HR function, which has been troubling throughout this entire past 3.5 years. Of course, we know that there's been many employees, particularly actually many women, that have left the mayor's office, and HR has turned a blind eye to the operations of the mayor's office, of course. We know that HR has had struggles with the hiring in the fire department, of course, been hiring people with lower scores, breaking civil service law, has been unable to provide information. This is probably just another indication that we have a major HR problem in the city as well, that we're now finding out people can start working for the city without having any without any approval from City Hall, being budget or HR, or filing the necessary paperwork, or undergoing training. I mean, it's a startling finding, and certainly that's something we're going to look further into over the next several weeks.
Now, you just said something. Did you say there was a lot of women leaving the Sheehan administration?
Certainly that left the mayor's office over the past several years, and that was all while Matt Peters was chief of staff, and that's a problem, and that's something that there's people now coming forward that are talking about that, and I think that there's going to be more folks that come forward and talk about what is going on in the mayor's office. Just a couple days ago, there was some reporting by the Associated Press about the mayor's office in New York City, and found that there was a similar set of circumstances. And it's just another example of the rhetoric of the Sheehan administration that seems to espouse that there is this we want to promote women in the workplace, that we want to advance women. But yet, nonetheless, we know that there's many women that left the mayor's office. And when you have so many that have left, it starts to paint a picture of a larger structural problem and a lack of controls.
Now, you just said also about the that there's hiring without the approval of in the mayor's office. Is this a new phenomenon?
Well, for me, that was one of the, as I said, you know, I wasn't surprised to see that there was a 20 or 21 or 22, $23 million deficit. What I was surprised by is, again, that HR, and again, I know that there's some weaknesses there that we have seen before. Of course, you know, you look at the hiring of Nicholas Vita, who jumped over 75 other applicants with higher scores to obtain a position as an Albany firefighter. So we knew that there was already weaknesses in the HR function. But to understand now that there are people that are hired by the City of Albany without, again, budget approval, without HR approval, without citywide training, and without paperwork, that's a problem. That's a major problem. And again, you know, if the mayor was being responsible here, she would probably be making a change here today after reading that report as it relates to the leadership in HR. And that's been a problem that we have known about for some time, but I did not know that it went to this level, Cynthia. And for me, that's something that is certainly I had to read it a second and a third and a fourth time to really understand what I was reading, because that's unheard of. I mean, when I worked over at the for New York State in the office of the state comptroller for 7 years, in that office, there are protocols that are followed. I work now over, as I told you, for the Albany County comptroller. There are protocols that are followed. To think that we have a situation at City Hall whereby someone could start in a department without having those protocols followed is somewhat startling. I think it will be to many people when they understand the implications of that finding more broadly.
Who initiated that? Who do you think initiated that?
Who initiated?
The fact that, you know, there's not all these safeguards in place.
Well, I don't think, you know, look, I don't think that anybody really may have initiated it per se. I think it speaks to a organization, City of Albany, which is a $170 million organization approximately, that doesn't have appropriate controls in place, right? And, you know, when over in my work daytime, in my professional work as an auditor, I mean, you look for appropriate internal controls. And in these instances, it appears that those internal controls are not in place. Certainly, after reading the finding of the third-party auditor, it looks like those controls aren't in place. And the City Hall should be coming forward here and determining across our workforce how many people are working without those appropriate trainings and without paperwork submitted. That's something that we really need to find out. It actually exposes the city to a significant degree of liability as well. So, again, that's something we're going to be looking at over the coming days and weeks, and we have some folks researching it, and we're going to look into it further because, as I said, people need to feel that the city of Albany is a well-functioning organization. Taxpayers deserve that. And employees and job applicants need to feel like there is a fair set of processes in place. And insofar as it appears that those are not the case, we need to take corrective action.
What has this administration proposed to do about this structural deficit that we've got?
Well, not much, and not really anything at all. I mean, we have a plan that we've been very candid about with voters. We've been very candid about with the media, and we have a plan here moving forward. That includes, one, going out and auditing the tax-exempt status of nonprofits in the city of Albany. So we know that there is significant business activity being sheltered under charitable umbrellas. So take a look at SUNY Poly on Fuller Road. Take a look at Albany Medical Center, which has a $10 million 800-car garage in Park South off the tax rolls. Those are things that we need to go understand better. And I think we need to get facts before. So the way we do that is we go conduct a audit of their tax-exempt status as a city. That's something we move forward with. So that's one piece of our plan. Second piece of our plan is we need to implement an attrition plan. We can keep positions in the budget, but we are not going to be able to, in 2018, backfill positions like the Sheehan administration has done. Certainly, it's going to be a challenging few years. We know that. And we're going to need to produce savings very promptly. So one of the ways we do that is we take a large cohort of employees that we currently have in their 50s that are nearing retirement age, and we can anticipate some retirements. We need to take those. Again, those are positions we can keep in the budget. The economy turns around. Those are things that we can fund going forward. But here and now, in 2018, we're going to have to find ways to save money, and that's one of the other piece of our plan. The other thing we need to do is we need to better share services with other municipal governments in the capital region. And one example that I think is really timely as we are talking here on June 1st is related to our recreation programming. Albany County now has some robust recreation programming. They've had particular success with their karate program, with their lacrosse program, and this department is a year and a half old. And under the leadership of John D'Antonio as the commissioner at the county level, who used to be the commissioner of the city recreation department, they've really made some great strides over the past several months. We could very easily share a service in that regard with Albany County, provide some quality programming to children within city boundaries after school, and we can do that in late June, July, August. For children, and I think that has a great impact, and we can do that in a rather cost-effective manner. So, and there's other services as well that we can look at shared services, and PFM recommended that we do these things that I'm talking about. So we only received a confirmation of what our platform has been, and that will be our plan going forward. As for the incumbent administration, my opponents, I mean, they offer excuses. They have a lot of different things that they are talking about. However, the reality remains there's a $20.8 to $23.5 million deficit as cited by a third-party auditor with experience reviewing municipalities, and that deficit that's projected would result in a 36 to 41% tax increase, and that's wholly unacceptable to me. In fact, our plan is not to raise taxes. So, and the reason it's not to raise taxes and the reason we need to go be proactive about our budget is because right now we cannot attract any new development in the city of Albany without paying people. And when I say that we pay people, we pay developers. And that's in the form of property tax abatements, mortgage recording tax abatements, and sales tax abatements. And certainly I would not be raising taxes any further as mayor. And I believe in the absence of any other plan that is demonstrated by my opponents, folks could safely assume that they would be looking at a very large property tax increase.
The budget deficit this year was 12.5, and the mayor had gone to the governor to ask for more or less a bailout. Do you think their philosophy has been, okay, we could be fiscal irresponsible because when budget time rolls around, we'll just go to the state and ask for that money? Do you think that's been the mindset of this administration?
Well, here's my sense on the matter. I think that there's folks, well, the governor himself, the governor and folks in the Assembly and Senate and those staffers around those members of the Assembly and senators, I think that there is a level of understanding here that the city of Albany is the capital of New York State, and we need to have a fiscally strong city, and I think that there's been a demonstration of a commitment in that regard. Of course, it was only about 9 years ago now that the Assembly and Senate approved a multi-year, 30-year payment in lieu of taxes as it relates to the Harriman campus for $330 million. So unfortunately, that was vetoed by Governor Patterson at the time. And then back in 2000, of course, former Mayor Jerry Jennings was able to obtain a 30-year payment in lieu of taxes as it relates to the Empire State Plaza. So there has been a commitment there from folks at the state level, and we know that this governor holds the city of Albany in a high regard as well. But I think what we have been missing here is a credible plan. There has never been a credible plan put forth to New York State as it relates to how we would close the city's deficit over it speaks to the need for multi-year financial planning, that we can show that we are saving money over 3, 5, 7, 10 years. And that would build a level of confidence whereby perhaps the state would then partner with the city and provide a long-term stream of payments, unlike the one-shots that have been achieved over the past couple of years, because that is not long-term planning. That is filling a gap year by year. And again, I think the state's looking for a partner in the city of Albany, and certainly as mayor, we would put together a strong management team, which of course is not in place now. I mean, let's face it, city of Albany over the past 3 years has had 3 budget directors, has had 3 police chiefs, has had 3 chiefs of staff in the mayor's office, has had constant turnovers of staffers in the mayor's office, as we talked about earlier. There's been no consistent presentation. There's been no credible plan put forward. And insofar as we could have an opportunity to go present to the state, which we would early in 2018, we could show a credible multi-year plan. And then I think we would have a much greater willingness from folks at the state level to partner with the city of Albany.
As you go around walking the city, what's the reaction? Are they enthusiastic about what you're trying to achieve?
Well, I think there's a great level of frustration out there with voters. And then my job as a candidate for the highest office in the city of Albany is to not only understand that frustration, but also then present a plan. That is what running for office is about, is not just the discontent that's out there, but also showing that, well, hold on here, there's a much better alternative. We have a plan. The incumbent has excuses. And we've been out talking to voters, and, you know, you talk about a whole range of items, and people are concerned about taxes, fees, and fines. They're concerned about having an affordable waste management disposal option going forward, of course, as our landfill is nearing the very end of its life. They're concerned about recreation programming. There's great concerns about infrastructure in the city, and I really do believe we need to make some significant investments in our streets, sidewalks, curbs, water, and sewer systems, because again, if you don't have a city that is conducive to attracting investment, you're not going to ever be in a position whereby you can start to reduce your tax burden going forward on folks. And it was interesting, just yesterday I was talking to somebody who was talking about investing $1.5 million in North Albany, but the city has not maintained the roads, streets, sidewalks, or curbs in that area. So that investment now is not going to happen. So I think people want to have confidence that they have a mayor who's accessible, and certainly folks who know me know that that's the case. They want to have a mayor who understands public finance. And again, I think the folks that have worked with me over the past 10 years at the state comptroller's office, at the county comptroller's office, and in my work as a city council member understand that I bring that expertise to this race. And they want somebody who's going to be honest and candid. And we've done that as well. We've talked about unpopular things like auditing tax-exempt entities, like not selling the Palace Theater for a dollar, like having an attrition plan whereby over the first several years that we were in office, perhaps 18 to 24 months, we would be unable to hire like we are hiring now. But we're being realistic with people. We're being candid. We're being honest. And I would hope that Mayor Sheehan would do the same over the coming months, because the I can't call them anything else but lies. I mean, the lies that are being told by that administration, they're really an insult to the public. And luckily, folks are really perceptive to that. The voters, we have smart voters here in the city. They're able to perceive that. And when you have a $23 million deficit that would represent a 41% tax increase, and you say that that's a sign that we're headed in the right direction, I think voters understand that that's a candidate that is not being truthful.
In 2013, the turnout for the citywide election was pretty low. And given the fact that because of Trump, politics is not, an inclusionary thing right now, but it's a spectator sport. And I think that's going to further diminish the turnout for the September primary, given the fact that people watch it for entertainment and not take part in the process. What do you say to that?
I think turnout will be up significantly this year. I'm very hopeful that it will be from 2013. Of course, in 2013, Democratic primary for mayor, there was 10,700 voters who voted, and that's an all-time low. But you have to remember about that race. That race wasn't really a contest, right? It was Kathy Sheehan and Corey Ellis, and they didn't even, Corey didn't even challenge the mayor. He at that time, and who knows what deal they had cut at the time, because now Corey was more than happy to, after years of presenting as though he was an alternative to Kathy Sheehan, he very quickly cut deals with Kathy Sheehan and Dan McCoy and jumped on board with them. And there's many that have speculated that that race was a total fix anyway. And that's why Corey never really competed with the mayor. Of course, as I said, now he's running on her ticket after presenting as though he was some alternative to the mayor. So it wasn't a real contest. Voters perceived that, and a lot of voters stayed home. And it showed up in the numbers. Again, there was 10,700 voters when just 4 years prior, there was actually 14,400 voters. So it was 3,700 voters who dropped off the map to an all-time low in the Democratic primary in the city of Albany. And I think that that number will increase this year, because this year there is a challenge that I've put together with my campaign that is based on issues. People are going to have a real choice between an incumbent administration who will raise their taxes, raise fees, as they have with a very regressive trash fee targeted at renters in the city, will continually increase the nuisance fines that we have in the city of Albany now. And there's a whole host of new fine revenue that the city has generated by fining people. And workers in the city will have a choice between being respected in their workplace and voting for my campaign, voting for me, and being in a workplace whereby they are not respected and they don't have contracts and there's consistent abuse of the employees in the city workforce. So there's going to be real options for people this year. And again, we're generating a large degree of support in that regard.
Now you say, there's roughly 90,000 people in the city of Albany. And in 2009, you said there were 14,000 people who came out to vote, they're only a percentage of the population. And we are in dire financial straits at this point. People have got to realize that if they don't go out and vote and something catastrophic happens, you know, they're kind of responsible for it because they considered politics a spectator sport rather than getting involved.
Right.
How can you, as a candidate for mayor, make people realize you gotta get involved, you gotta vote, maybe run for office yourself? How do you, as a candidate, inspire that in people?
Yeah, and, you know, I think there is at the federal, state, and local level, there is a large degree of skepticism in about politics, and I get that, right? There's dissatisfaction right now, very strong dissatisfaction as it relates to the president at this time, and certainly there's folks that are skeptical of, after coming off an election last year with Donald Trump, people are very skeptical of politics. You know, this is a candidate that actually lost the popular vote and won the presidency, and people feel that their vote doesn't count. And I think the Electoral College contributes to that as well. And the entire tenor and tone of that race as well really further fueled the skepticism. But here in Albany, I mean, I think, again, we have to go out there and meet voters, show that there is a difference in this Democratic primary, right? And that difference being, as I said before, that there is a dramatic difference on the fiscal management of the city. We will respect the workers. I'm a former union member, dues-paying union member with the Public Employees Federation. Paid dues for 7 years over when I was at the Office of the State Comptroller. And know that I'm somebody who would be accessible, that people can pick up the phone and call the mayor. They can come to City Hall and talk to the mayor. That's what they need to feel. And they don't feel that right now with this mayor, and I don't think they ever will, because that's just not the style of this mayor. In fact, just a few nights ago, we had a neighborhood association meeting whereby the mayor and I were presenting to a group of neighborhood association members in the Pine Bush. And presentation was over. The mayor was rude to one member of the audience in particular, an individual that was denied an ability to take a test as it relates to obtaining a plumbing license, was just outright rude in front of 35, 40 people, insulted the individual. And then at the end of the meeting, just beelined out of the building. I mean, you know, so that's not an accessible mayor, right? That's a mayor who is vindictive, a mayor who is not accessible. And, you know, it's 3.5 years. There's a track record now. I get it. The first year in office, anything that was a problem in the Sheehan administration, well, they blame Jerry Jennings. And year two, anything would go wrong in the Sheehan administration, blame Jerry Jennings, blame the previous administration, you know, blame the predecessor. Year three, they continued to do that. That continued to be their strategy. And that was their fallback option, I think. But now it's year four. And you know, you're year four, you're up for reelection. And, you know, blaming your predecessor, that's an excuse, right? And we talked at the beginning of this interview about we've put together a campaign that we've thought long and hard about city policy and really put the work in, and we have a plan. And the current administration is offering excuses. And I think voters are going to perceive that. Again, I have faith in voters. They are, you know, smart. I think they're starting to really watch this race now as we enter June and petitioning starts in a few more days. And you know, there's going to be major differences between the incumbent and I as it relates to this campaign and as it relates to accessibility. And those differences as it relates to accessibility will be very clear on the first night of petitioning. I'll be out going to doors, meeting voters, talking to voters, obtaining signatures. That's what I plan to do on my first night of petitioning. The mayor, on the other hand, won't be petitioning. Her petition drive won't start till Wednesday, June 7th, because her campaign, actually, the first night of petitioning, is having a $2,500 cocktail party at 677 Prime, right? So, you know, again, there's a major difference between the campaign we're running, where we're going and meeting taxpayers, seniors on fixed incomes, kids that need recreation programming in the summer, and workers, and offering them a way to empower themselves in their community and in their workplace, and a mayor who is attending $2,500 cocktail parties on the first night of petitioning, right? So, again, I think we'll demonstrate those differences over the course of the next several months, and we'll be in a position to win the race on September 12th.
Now, if somebody wants to carry petitions for you, make phone calls, make a contribution, how can they do so?
They can, well, there's a lot of ways that people reach out to us. One is the most frequent way people reach out to us is through Facebook. But we also have a website that offers a way for people to communicate with us. My phone number is, of course, listed on the city website. It's listed on my Facebook page. I pride myself on being accessible. But I would recommend people either get us through Facebook, they can get us on our website, or they can certainly email the campaign at any time at frank@commissoforalbany.com. So please, I encourage folks to reach out to us. Help us out on Tuesday, June 6th going forward. We're going to be out with a strong petitioning drive. We're not going to be at cocktail parties for $2,500. I mean, we're going to go out and meet voters, hear about what's going on in the city. And as it relates to the incumbents campaign, again, they're going a different route. They're raising money from folks outside the city who don't pay taxes in the city. And that's fine and well. That's just a difference that we're going to be comfortable with here. And we're going out and we're going to go meet voters. So please have folks reach out.
Frank, thank you so much for being on Focus on Albany. I look forward to talking with you as the campaign evolves. You've been listening to mayoral candidate Frank Commisso Jr. If you like this show, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, download on your smartphone, subscribe to iTunes. If you have a comment about this show, hashtag Focus on Albany. But I want to give a plug to the new FM station here in Albany, WCAA 107.3 on your dial, and it's running 24/7, and within the next couple of weeks, I will be your morning host every Monday. Thank you for listening to Frank Commisso, and thanks, Frank, for taking the time to talk to the audience.